Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is a superintendent I just absolutely admire. The last time we spoke, we just met on Zoom, just said, hey, let's just catch up. And as we were catching up, I'm just sitting there. I didn't expect this to be kind of like a pen in hand type of conversation. We're just catching up. Next thing you know, the pen was in hand, taking down strategy. She is one of the recognized minds across the country. And I'm just so happy to call her a friend and a sister. I want to welcome Dr. Monique Darisaw Akil from the Uniondale Union Free School District in Uniondale, New York. She is the proud superintendent. And I immediately asked her, I said, Dr. Akil, can you please come on VFE? Because if I got my pen learning from you, my audience needs to learn from you. So Dr. Darisaw Akil, how are you today?
Just about 5 hours down the way.
But how you doing?
I am doing well, and I'm really excited to be here and just, you know, to have a really rich conversation around education, leadership, strategy, and all the things. So I'm ready.
Absolutely. It was so good to see you at NISCUS about a couple months ago. Going to see you again coming up at NAPSE. But this episode is focused on you. We're going to unpack your intellectual property so that my audience will be able to obtain leadership methods and strategies. Because from our last conversation, I took so many leadership strategies that had a connected theme around systemic transformation that becomes systematized. So I want my viewers and my audience to be able to experience that. But this is a fun question, Dr. Darisaw Akil. So you ready? I want to hear this, right? So we know you're recognized, you know, across the state of New York. Everybody loves your work that you're underscoring in the Uniondale Union Free School District in Uniondale, New York. You have a recognized voice across the country, specifically around your leadership impact and methodologies. But as you continue to deepen this work in Uniondale and nationally, Dr. Darisaw Akil, what song defines your leadership signature and the AC stage of education after COVID-19?
Yes. Well, I'm so glad you started with that because I am a music lover and I think that music kind of defines the mood. And this was a challenging question for me in terms of where am I now? And I still had to take it back. Mm-hmm. I took it back to Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Love's in Need of Love Today.
That's a great one.
Yeah, I mean, I had to take it back, and that's what the Songs in the Key of Life, such a defining record, but I also think timeless. And I think that, you know, the more things are changing and the more that we're adapting, there are certain things that do not change. And I think that's the love, the passion, the patience, the still the sense of urgency. You know, that there were issues when he wrote those lyrics, and we have other issues right now that really make us think about what is it that really connects us, right? Now, it's not the technology, but it's the relationships and the love and the understanding that we should have for one another. So, you know, that was a fun question, but when I really thought about it, I was like, in terms of leadership, in terms of education, in terms of understanding that our work is bigger than us, it's bigger than this title. We are doing work that has the potential to change and transform generations. Yeah. I said it's about Stevie. It's about love is in need of love today.
Absolutely. Dr. Darisaw Akil, I want to highlight that, right? Because, you know, and even I fall victim to this, is that, you know, when I start getting in this, I think this is just more of me being in this domain technical mode where I've really been focusing on the holistic transformation and reauthorization of the operating model in education, right? The core elements, processes, substrates that make up the systems and disruptive structures for equity and all. But I think within my message, and thank you for this, Dr. Darisaw Akil, is that I do, and then also many of us need to remember the love, the passion, the patience, right? The patience around transformation, urgency, and defining what that looks like in that equilibrium. But the core pinnacle you highlighted, which is around relationships, I think that we cannot forget that specifically in the AC stage of education. Moreover, when there's such an emphasis on mental health and social emotional learning within our students of Generation Z, Generation Alpha, relations and the vitality of the education model itself, you hit right upon the core, which is around relationships. But we all need Stevie in our life. I still listen to Stevie as I wake up in the morning. So that, putting that, when you say love and needs a love today, that is an all time classic, Dr. Darius Akhil. But let's get into the work and the work that you are underscoring within the Uniondale Union Free School District. Absolutely remarkable, recognized across the ecosystem. Moreover, the work that you have been leading, the vision that you've been leading with your educational stakeholders. Congratulations, where you were announced as a 2023 Superintendents to Watch List for the National School Public Relations Association. Yay. Okay. That is meaningful. That's big because the work is being leveraged by the vision you are communicating. But what are some of those macro level initiatives, especially what we talked about, that is being underscored in Uniondale? And how is this leading to closing opportunity gaps for each and all?
So, great question again. And again, I think that some of the things that I've been leaning into sound very simplistic, and they should be, because I think that if something is so complex and so inaccessible, then people can't really wrap their heads around what is the focus and what is the vision. So for me, the strategy is really about focus, identifying, these core elements of our strategy that we're just going to lean into and be very consistent about and provide support about and be very public about. So, there's this saying in the Bible, write down the vision and make it plain. That is something that I truly live by. And I think that when I reflect on my experience as a teacher and as a leader and working under other leaders, I don't think that always I really understood what the big picture was, where are we going, what does success look like? And so one of the things that I've tried to do is really define that for folks. Like, this is what the end is going to be. We believe we can get there. These are the two or three things we're going to all do together to try to get there. This is how we're going to measure ourselves. This is how we're going to measure and evaluate and assess our growth towards those goals. And we're going to have shared goals. And so that's, I think been something that has people have kind of welcomed this idea of public accountability. And I think a lot of times people think about accountability as a dirty word because it has been weaponized, right? But when I talk about accountability, it's really about holding a mirror up to ourselves and saying, where are we? Where do we want to go? And how close are we to getting there? And if we're all aware of where the goalpost is, and we know we have to, get the ball to that goalpost, then, we have to have conversations about, are we moving forward? Are we, where are
Absolutely.
we on that? And so that's just a value that I have and I try to promote. So one is focus on three, no more than three big goals. Be very transparent around what those goals are, transparent around what success looks like, and then really invest in your people and build capacity in order for us to get there. A lot I learned early on in some of my leadership training that, when people are maybe not living up to our expectations in some areas, we're very quick to categorize that as resistance. Maybe people need upskilling.
Absolutely.
Maybe we need to remove some barriers that, you know, when we're in a leadership seat, we forget that there are real barriers that exist to people executing and implementing the things that we've asked them to do. And again, when sometimes people voice those things, we hear it as leaders is, you know, oh, you don't want to do it. When they're saying, no, I would love to do it, but I need a ladder, you know, I need some tools. And I think as leaders, really having a conversation, and creating feedback loops so that we can remove the barriers that prevent people from reaching the goal, so that we can, achieve what we're set out to achieve for students. And then I think the fourth thing I would say is there's a value that we hold in our district, a saying that schools can't do it alone. And so what that means is we have to bring other stakeholders in, which is, very vulnerable, because the more people that you bring into the conversation, the more feedback you get when you don't always want to hear it. But when we get those voices, those loud, critical voices around the table who are saying, listen to me, this is what I want for my children, and I don't see it. This is the kind of services we'd like to see, and we're not getting it yet, or we're not satisfied. If we actually let our egos go and listen, we can get better. So, there's some just leadership behaviors and core values that we have that help guide the actual transactional work that we have to do. But we have to have a certain set of core beliefs about how do we move an organization. And so those are my kind of four operating principles that help define and shape how we execute our mission.
Yeah, Dr. Darius Sawkill, we try to use Voices for Excellence as an asynchronous professional learning tool where that our viewers and participants can go back and forth, really personalize learning and take apart specific strategies, align it to their practices and principles, etc. But your answer is one of those, or your answer is an answer that should be played back multiple times, right? Because there's multiple sectors that leaders can be able to apply strategies into their professional practice. I love how you unpacked accountability, right? There is this misnomer about accountability, but how you contextualized it, where we're going, how close we are, and then the alignment to invest and build capacity where resistance can be interpreted as where essentially capacity gaps can be interpreted as being resistant. You highlighted focus, Michael Schmoker. Wow, that's a throwback. And a capacity building, Michael Follin. That's a throwback as well. But you simplified it from that specific context of reverse engineering of what success looks like, and you only identify two to three focuses. That really is the definition of what Smoker tries to get into, get us to apply within focus. Really good. Now, if you can, Dr. Darius or Akhil, I want to ask a sub question because I think that this is fundamentally important for any learning organization is the voices of the people that feel disenfranchised. And when I look at that, right, I always say that we have to apply a specific principle from business, which is we have to look at our families and our students as customers, because we know in every other industry, if a customer says we need to improve X or Y, we know that they're going to, or this organization or company is going to do it because there's profit margins tied to those specific upgrades and features. That's why design thinking becomes that essential to any new product that is going to be within an industry outside of education. Now, going back to that, we have a hard time doing that in the education sector because, as you stated, we have to let go of our ego, right? We're research and empirical based driven. Now, how do you, Dr. Darius Sawkill, close those feedback loops to start designing towards the voices and the agency of our most important customers, families and students, being customer centric?
So I think what you're talking about is the power dynamic, right? So what does differentiate school systems from private industry is, if by and large, if you are not responsive to your customers in industrial models, you will not survive.
Right.
People, your business will, you know, people will no longer, you know, purchase what you're selling.
Right.
However, in schools, by and large, I mean, we have competitors, we have charter schools and independent schools in certain areas, but by and large, the bulk of our children do not have choices. They're not going to say, I don't like Nike, I'm going to do Reeboks this year.
Right.
It's public school versus public school. And so I think because we haven't had, people haven't been empowered to make choices that would leave us bankrupt and make sure that we don't exist any longer, we haven't had to be as responsive to parents, particularly those who are disenfranchised, those who are marginalized, those who are immigrant, those whose children have special needs. We have not had to be as responsive to those voices. And so I love the idea of putting ourselves in a place where we hold that mirror up to ourselves and say, if this is not working, why are we here?
Yeah.
And so that does take a level of internal discipline. Again, making sure that we're living our values. So in every school organization, at some point, people say, well, what's your why? Well, we have to, you know, do more than just talk those words. We have to actually walk the walk in terms of saying, if I'm here for children, if what we're doing is not working for children, then why do we continue to do it? Then that means our organization does not really prioritize children or prioritize adult comfort. So the way that we go about really trying to get that information from our stakeholders, which I do, our end users, which are children, and their families, is a couple of things. We engage in a strategic planning process, which, you know, lots of districts and organizations do. But from the very inception of that process, we had students and families and staff of various levels around the table. And then from that time, again, we created this public scorecard where we're saying, this is where we want to go. And we not only share good data, which I'm really proud to say we have a lot of very promising data as a result of our efforts, but we also share the shortcomings. Yeah. And I am very proud of that, because what it does is it says we're human. We're not gonna insult your intelligence and tell you that we're hitting every metric. And we're also gonna ask you, what do you think we could do to hit that metric that we set out? So, you know, we want to have more of our students reading on grade level by the end of third grade. What do you think we could do? And your perspective is going to be different than my perspective. So we bring families and students to the table. One of the most humbling experiences has been for the past 4 years since I've been here, we have been administering student, you know, kind of climate surveys from grades 3 to 12. And we ask them everything from the quality of the assignments that they get to whether or not they think they're being prepared for college and careers to whether or not they feel respected and affirmed in our school environment. And the first year we did short answer questions as well as focus groups. And then we've moved to, you know, just the multiple choice. But I'm going to tell you, children take the time because someone actually asked them, what do you think? How do you feel? And, you know, sometimes those responses really, you know, kind of sting a little bit because we're thinking we're doing all these wonderful things. You know, we're, you know, partnering with companies to bring in, you know, guest speakers, and we're doing trips and after school programs. And kids are saying, I don't feel welcome when I walk through the door.
All right.
Lots of kids are saying that, not one or two, where we can say, well, that's an outlier, maybe some child that has some, you know, issues, like lots of kids. And what we've done is we've taken our, that I call it a report card for my leadership.
Yeah.
We put it on the table with kids. And we're saying, this is what you said. Can you tell us, like, what exactly in the organization, what is happening? Not who, because it's not about the individual. It's about the culture and the aggregate. So
Absolutely.
what are we doing? Where are we missing it? And they tell us. And then our commitment is, now we're going to do something about it. We're going to
Absolutely.
let you know that your voice has power, it has meaning. Because
Yes.
if people give you feedback and critical feedback and you do nothing, then you have set a me you've set a tone, you've given them the response they needed, that my voice really doesn't matter. You said
Right.
it, but it really doesn't, because you're not going to do anything differently with what you heard. So
Right.
we make a practice. We've invested in that. We paid for that. We don't do it internally. We believed in, I'm a qualitative researcher. I believe in norm, reference questions, not leading questions. So it's not something you do on the cheap. It's not something that you do overnight. It's not a Google survey. We analyze the data. We disaggregate it by race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, all the things, so that we understand, are our trans children feeling more marginalized? Do they feel like it's not a safe and affirming place for them? Are our Southeast Asian kids feeling not as affirmed? And I had students tell me, we don't have a huge South Asian population. They say, we don't really see ourselves in our curriculum. We don't really see ourselves in celebrations. We don't really see ourselves. And it's a small voice, but it's an important voice. And so we work to do something about it. And with parents, it's a constant process, as you know. Of trying to engage not just the voices that are loud and available, but the ones that I call the unheard and invisible voices, which a lot of times are immigrant families. And so that means we customize our parent. It's not one size fits all. So we'll have smaller, almost like micro meetings, right, for our newcomer families. Because their concerns might be a little different than our AP family concerns. And so we have people in our organization who are, connected to the community and who are, facilitating and curating these groups so that we can continue to have feedback loops, from that represent, the entirety of our organization.
Absolutely. To my audience, that is another aspect or another segment you want to play back. That is very, very strategic and intentional on the design of the feedback loop that Dr. Derisaw Akhil articulated. Thank you. Thank you, because you are
Say one more thing
including.
on that.
Please, please, please
One more
go.
thing that I want to say is, I am in my 32nd year of education, and I came from Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. If anybody's listening understands what that means, before the $1 million, $3 million brownstones. And my father is a preacher, and one of the values that I learned from him is getting in the street. And when I say that, it means that we have to get from behind our desk and our beautiful offices and our beautiful clothes and go to where the people are. And so I try to communicate that to my leaders as well. You will see me dressed in jeans. You will see me in laundromats. You'll see me. I shop where my family shop. I worship. I go to churches where people in my community go to church. And I know what that means. That means that between altar call and the way out, someone's going to say, Dr. Akhil, I just have one question. I know exactly what that means, and I'm okay with it. And so what that does is it changes the balance of power. It lets people know that I'm really here for you. I'm really here. I've gone to churches where they speak Haitian Creole, and I don't. And I sit there and I listen. And I just want to vibe with them, because I know that the people who might go to those institutions don't necessarily come to my meetings. And I want to let them know I'm here for you as well. So for me, community visibility, being out there and not being afraid to mix it up in the street in a positive way with our community, allows for a different type of feedback than when we hold the power at our board meetings and yeah, so that's what I would say. Get out there in the street.
Dr. Darasaw Akhil, I'll tell you this, 100, as the kids and the parents would say, you, that is one of the most, and this is a very subjective statement, that is one of the most integrated and moving strategies to include the voices of the constituents that I've heard so far on VFE. And thank you for being so deliberate with that, because yes, the voices of the unheard. That's where you go into the bodegas, you go into the barbershops, you go into the laundromats, you go to the various churches around the corners, you go or in the community, you go to the YMCAs and wait in and wait outside or go inside and wait and talk to the parents that are waiting outside. Yes, we have to be strategic to get to those voices because they have a lot to say. And believe it or not, and I guarantee you, Dr. Akhil, they appreciate you for doing that because, wow, what superintendent will come into my neighborhood or come into my bodega, come into my barbershop, come into my community or community center, come into my church to be able to break or have service or come in and buy a snack or something in the store. You don't see that much. And I guarantee you, your community is so appreciative of that. But moving on, Dr. Akhil, we can talk for hours about community engagement, having the voices of the disenfranchised be a part of the voice of the design, because yes, I saw my mother do it plenty of times. It got shut down. And I remember saying, if I'm ever in a position of power, I will never let that happen. And we are in these seats, Dr. Akhil, to do that. But moving on to now analyzing the model in totality, right? Where we're seeing these multiple quandaries that are challenging, challenging education holistically, whether it be from the social, emotional, academic aspect, the needs of the students, specifically when we start underscoring this to Generation Z and Generation Alpha. So we're starting to see this trend, right, where multiple metrics are suggesting that we're getting towards near pre-pandemic aggregates, but those are only in some content areas. But there needs to be a strategic acceleration that is in conjunction with addressing the multiple challenges that you are facing within your district, as well as our superintendents abroad. But from a leadership lens, Dr. Akhil, how do we address this paradox of progress with the noise that stifles its momentum?
Wow. So what I would say is, when you think about the pandemic, and I was, in a leadership role at that time as well, and nothing that we had been taught was going to work, because none of us had ever experienced, we weren't around during the Spanish flu. None of us had ever experienced anything like it. And so the level of adaptability and innovation and risk-taking was something I had never seen in education, in my entire career. We tried everything because we didn't have a choice, right? And we knew that our old methods of doing things was not going to work, right? So that's when we started thinking about one-to-one devices and virtual platforms and flexible learning and all that. And we all talked about, the phrase, reimagining education, right? We're
I
all gonna
do.
reimagine, we're gonna reset, we're gonna, the new plat, new frontier. And what happened? As soon as things got to some level of normalcy, we really kind of got right back to where we started. I don't know how we allowed that to happen. But when you think about, student progress and, where are we? I think we do have to measure things differently than we have measured and assessed student achievement before. I think we have to really look at multiple measures. We have students who are returning to school, and they still have the baggage and the trauma of the pandemic that they bring with them. They still have, maybe years where there wasn't as much structure at home. And also, there was a denormalization around, regular school attendance. If you're telling kids for 2 or 3 years, two years, there were a good 2 years where school in the traditional sense became optional. So now you have the, maybe school phobia set in, or maybe the collective forgetting around school protocols and norms. And so we're asking teachers to try to reteach behaviors that they really didn't have to teach before, and focus on content simultaneously. So I think it would be unfair to measure students' progress with the same measuring sticks that we used before. There's just so many other social factors for our kids as well as for our teachers. So I don't think that works, right? So I think that we have to come up with a new way of assessing, and it shouldn't be just those state assessments that happen every once in a while. I think we have to look at where they are, get very good baseline data, and think and measure them more frequently. Look at progress instead of, a final summative product. But where's the progress? And are we measuring progress just on one or two skills? Are we measuring progress on social behavior? And are we giving students different ways to demonstrate their mastery? So
Excellent.
to me, it's more about that project-based learning. It's more about engagement. When you're talking about the different generations, they're not interested in what we're serving. They're not interested in sitting all day in one spot. When they were at home, they could have their iPad on the couch and read books, listen to music, and then want them to come back and, sit at desk and in rows and, move when the bell says to move. I think we have to create more opportunities for young people to demonstrate their learning in different ways.
Dr. Akila, I always say this within my keynote, just the reminder of the students that we're educating. We have a student that essentially operationalizes Lyft, Uber, Amazon Prime, Gemini, AI at the palm of their hand when they're outside of school. But when they return to school, they receive a blockbuster education. So we see that misalignment with what they're engaging in from an economic standpoint, but still have the old first revolution instructional and industrial nodes a part of their academic program. And you are absolutely correct, where we have to start looking and measuring things differently using multiple measures. And that demonstration of mastery becomes critical because it segues into our next question around developing Generation Z and Generation Alpha for the 22nd century. And that hasn't even hit our education vernacular, or I even like to say, even within the leadership consortium yet, because we haven't, we're still trying to address the multiple quandaries that we're still facing now within the 21st century. But our customers, 22nd century individuals, preparing them for the future of work, for the future of world, I think we do have to look at them differently and measure them differently in accordance to the demonstration of talent. 21st century's competencies, 22nd century's around talent, because of that global perspective, technology and AI within their worlds. But absolutely, experimentation, risk-taking, we need to start looking at that and underscoring it more to defy the old methods, because Generation Alpha, they're going to be like, why are we doing this? And they have every right to be asking why. But going into this next question around Generation Z and Generation Alpha, Dr. Akil, they represent the mainstream of education today, where our sophomores, juniors, and seniors are Generation Z, the first matriculation of our students and for Generation Alpha into high school is this year that there are freshmen. So essentially, we're phasing out Generation Z and now seamlessly moving the whole education model to be focused on Generation Alpha. So they're Generation Alpha, they're the generative natives, okay? And when we talk about the construct, the model, and the structures of education, you just said it, they still underpin traditional modes from the first Industrial Revolution. So now, this shift for the 22nd century in alignment to Generation Alpha, because they're going to be lamented into the 22nd century. Where do we start around? How do we now intentionally look at changing our practices and instructional systems, organizational structures around innovation? And then also, what does this disruption look like? Because, we know that if we don't change anything, we're exacerbating the readiness gaps because we're only taking these modular shifts from the DC stage of education. What's your perspective about that, Dr. Akhil?
So I think you hit it on the head, in a lot of ways in terms of how the economy and the world of work is changing and whether or not our schools are preparing our children for that, what will be the future of work. And also the future of children's interests. So, I mean, one of the studies that I've been looking at is in some ways, the divestment in college, in the traditional college model, and how a lot of young people today are deciding that they don't buy it, that they're the traditional 4-year college enrollment numbers are declining. And schools are still kind of putting that carrot out there, like, oh, this is preparing you for college. And kids are like, I don't know if I don't know if that's for me. And I don't know if that's going to guarantee me the future. You keep promising me that it will. So I think for schools, what that means is stop trying to focus on specific careers, which is really how I was educated. We were given probably a very short list of career options that were available to us. And we thought we had to, tailor our lives to choosing one of those models. You're going to be a teacher, you're going to be a nurse, you're going to be a doctor, might be a lawyer, you might work in a bank. The careers that our children are going to be, auditioning or, even thinking about haven't even been named yet. If you think about 15 years ago, was there anything called the content creator that people could actually have a viable career around? And so I think for school leaders, the first thing is to really, suspend your ideas about what the future of careers will look like and really think about what are the behaviors. And you start to talk about risk-taking, creativity, collaboration, adaptability, global readiness and preparedness. Like, what are the habits of mind you want your children to have? And how do we create the learning experiences that allow them to like develop those types of muscles, right? Leadership, digital citizenship, emotional intelligence, financial literacy, trading, entrepreneurship, do they have those types of opportunities? And my biggest fear is that certain communities, the children have those kinds of opportunities, those exposure, the access, the type of learning, experiences that will again hone those muscles. You can't tell me you're preparing leaders and your children never have an opportunity to lead.
Doctor.
It doesn't work. It's like telling me, it's like you telling me, Michael, that you're gonna teach me how to, drive, or you're gonna teach me how to fly a plane, and we sit here and you talk about it to me for an hour. At some point, you're gonna have to put me in the plane.
Absolutely.
Right? If you want me to
Absolutely.
fly, at some point you have to put me in the plane. So as schools, when do we put the children in the pilot's seat for them to fly the plane? And so
Great.
I'm not saying that we figured this out in Uniondale. I wouldn't say that. What I would say is that we're pushing the edges, we're challenging each other, we're creating pilots. We're creating real world work experiences where kids are in the pilot seat. We have EMT programs. We have barbering programs. We have certified nursing assistant programs. We're bringing entrepreneurs in, real life entrepreneurs, who have small businesses and who run corporations, who are social entrepreneurs. And we're letting people that look like them, and we're letting them see This is
Yeah,
what
great.
it is. You like doing hair? Well, we're going to introduce you to someone who is a brand ambassador who started doing hair just like maybe you did or your sister did, and is now a brand ambassador and is advising global companies on hair care products all around the world. And we're bringing those people in so you can see that if you like doing hair, this is how and where it could take you. Something I would have never even imagined as a teenager. So we're trying to do that. So I'm not going to say that we've gotten figured it out. We figured it out and that we're doing it for all kids every day, but we're pushing ourselves and we are collecting data about how many kids are having these types of experiences so that we can make sure they're really ready for the careers of the future.
Dr. Akil, I'll tell you this. You figured out a strong prototype that as you continue to iterate it, you are preparing kids for the 22nd century. Wow. And what I love about this, right, is you embedded the habits of mind. We can't forget that. We cannot forget that because that's the true development of competencies and talents within our students as well. But I want to unpack something for my audience that Dr. Darisaw Akil stated that's very important, right? The construct of education focuses on college readiness. And what we do as a residual effect, our practices, behaviors, and communications focuses on what? You have to go to college. But what we have to do, what Dr. Darisaw Akil did so intentionally within Uniondale, is that there's still that emphasis on college readiness, but there's also that emphasis on what 22nd century calls for, career readiness and digital readiness integrated together. If you unpack or look at the data and ask Generation Alpha what they want to be when they grow up, Dr. Darisaw Akil already has it in her program. Most Generation Alpha students, Dr. Akil, they want to be entrepreneurs. I asked my 9-year-old son, he wants to own his business and make a lot of money and have great impact. I'm like, okay, when I was 9, I wasn't even thinking about that. But that's who's in our school. So how are we preparing the next level of entrepreneurs around specific career ideas and readiness so that they're leveraging technology, AI into that as well. Very good, Dr. Akil. Really love that. But I want to underscore this with or expand upon this with this question right here, because I think that's very important, very intentional how you're preparing Generation Alpha for the 22nd century demonstration of learning, underscoring elements, important elements from the habits of mind. I mean, focusing on the future of the child's interest. But when we think about leveraging now AI into the organizational threads, right, these shifts have to have a step function process that is phased over time. So as we continue to concretize various forms of AI emerging technologies within our core practices, specifically in the context of systems design, Dr. Akil, going back to what you're doing in Uniondale, which strategies or methods can be interfaced so equity and excellence is rooted in this digital transformation process within any learning organization? So what does that look like in your district, but how can this be applied in any learning organization?
So I just want to go back to one thing, and again, it's this like false dichotomy of we're either preparing students for college or careers, right? And I'm going to loop back to this question around AI. So my work is around preparing students for every option available. We want to make sure that whatever they choose, they're going to be prepared for that. And I think there was a time where you were tracked early on. Someone made a decision when you were 9 that you're going to go to a liberal arts college or you're going to go to a technical college or that you're going to work in the post office. And so we want to make sure they have the foundational skills that whatever they choose, they will be ready for. In addition to that, another, just learning, that we should all, it's just a universal truth that our young people, the generations that you're speaking of, Z and the Alpha generation, they're going to have more than one career.
Yes.
You have had more than one career, but there are a lot of us who haven't been encouraged to have more than one career, didn't know that that was a possibility. The students that are in front of us might have four or five different careers. They might decide to go into law, then they want to open up a pizza shop. I
Yeah.
mean, that's the reality, and there's nothing wrong with that. So we have to ensure that they are agile enough to be able to make those shifts seamlessly. And
Absolutely.
also that as teachers and principals and educators, that we are normalizing that change is life. And it's okay to change. And it's not about failure. It's about experimentation. So going back to AI, right? How do we ensure that our students are able to experiment? I think a lot of districts are struggling with how to introduce this new, I won't even call it a new technology, like this like I can't even describe it. It's a revolution. Like, how do we integrate a revolution? I think what's happening is we're trying to put the revolution in a box and stick it in our pocket and take it out on special occasions, right?
Right.
It's not, it's all around us. It's like pretending like cell phones don't exist. It's all around us now, right?
Yeah.
So I think that it's something that we're struggling with, but what I would say to any school leader, any leader, period, is lean into our own discomfort with not knowing where it's going to go, knowing that it's something that's not easily regulated, it's not easily predicted. We have to lean in. And so one of the things we've done in our district is one, we tried to provide a lot of training to the adults because that's what happens when people are blocking it. It's because they don't understand it. They fear it. So we try to make sure all our adults know, how to use it, how this can be a tool to help you with your work, first of all. And two, how can we ensure that our students are not just end users? It's like, I want our kids to be the ones who write the code and design the next iteration of what, generative AI could be. And so we have to create these maker spaces and these think tanks and places where kids can design. And so one of the places I'm excited about is our gaming spaces. We have gaming classes, gaming clubs, and I really feel like that's the place where there's the tinkering that we need, that kids need to discover. We have also created a digital coding class in all of our elementary schools that's not just for, special, whatever special kids mean, because I know all my children are special, but every child gets to have an exposure to coding in our schools. And so I think that by working with co consultants, we bring consultants in because we know that we're not experts in this. We bring folks in who are experts to collaborate with our teachers to help us create projects to expand what it could look like. And we bring students in to help us shape policy. So we have an AI committee that's made up of students and our director of informational technology and administrators. And we talk about what do we want the rules of engagement to be around AI? Can you use it to create your whole paper? You can, but who benefits from that? How do you use it to automate tasks, but not take away your ability to try and practice? That's what we're trying to, work on with our students. We're co-constructing that with our kids. We're not telling them this is the way to do it. Because whatever we create, whatever barriers that we try to create, they'll only figure out, try to put a lock on your kid's phone. Try to tell your kid they can't go on some social media platform. I'll give them 10 minutes and they will,
We'll
come
figure
up with
it
a solution to, override whatever control you tried to put in place. So we might as well just bring them into the conversation and say, how can we do this together? And that's what we're doing in our district. We're trying to co-construct the rules of engagement around AI. What I don't want from my district, which is, made up of all students of color, 99.9% of our students are Latin or of African descent. I do not want them to be left behind.
Correct.
competing against kids who've been using these tools in their classes since they were in middle school. I don't want them to go to college, trade school, whatever, and not know how to use AI to generate, IEPs or to help provide feedback. I was in a conference and they said, in the future, one of your coworkers is not going to be human. I want my kids to know how to handle that.
Absolutely. That's so important, Dr. Derisaw-Akil. So important. When you speak of ethics, right, and ethics, and I like to say guidelines, because the sophistication and the rapidity of AI is becoming so fast that if we put it in policy, it becomes outdated within the next day. So that, that changing or flexible language within the guidelines is so important. But professional learning, co-designing, but one thing that I think, and you hit upon it, Dr. Derisaw-Akil, is that I like to say, and I've been saying this within my domestic work and then also my international work with various ministries as well as entities in the GCC and beyond, is that we have to have this integrated systems of digital transformation. Just like with the old operating model in education, the density of it and the dexterity of it is so dense that not one singular strategy can be able to address the multiple quandaries within that. Same thing with the system, I like to say the system of digital transformation, that because of the dexterity and the rapidity of change within AI, that there has to be multiple integrated or multifunctional strategies using, let's say that, a specific element within your operating model will be automated, but you're using reactive intelligence systems to address, specific student needs, or you might use generative AI to decentralize the curriculum so that AI is integrated within pedagogy, or you're creating a CTE alignment using an IoT platform, meaning that there's a variety of different systems of digital transformation that's integrated, but there's that level of alignment and coherence with AI. That's very hard to get to, right, within an organization and system. But again, it talks about, you talk about professional learning being that foundational construct, because Dr. Derisaw-Akil, that is the issue domestically and internationally as well. And I can say from both areas here in the US and beyond internationally, that how do we get to that multidimensional strategy or strategies around integrating the system of digital transformation in a coherent alignment and fusion context? Very good, Dr. Derisaw-Akil. Woo! That is very, you can see I get very passionate about that. But good sister, last question. All right, you made it through. You made it through. Okay, you made it through. One more question. And this one, I think, and again, subjective, I think this is the hardest, because I'm only limiting you to three words. You can't say anything beyond three words. But here's the thing, Dr. Akil, people don't listen to me.
Oh, good. I was good, 'cause I wasn't either. I said I need at least four. Can I
People don't
borrow
listen
a
to me.
vowel? What?
Something right, they don't listen to me at all. So as I say to every guest that comes on here, take this question as it is. What three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast regarding cultural responsiveness and cultural humility in the AC stage of education?
Yeah, so mine, seriously, I thought about four words, and it's close the access gap.
Close the act. All right. And I'm going to break my own rules. Please expand upon that. My audience is screaming for that explanation.
Creating equitable systems that are
Yeah.
culturally responsive recognizes that our children already have everything they need to be successful, whether they are coming from, disenfranchised or marginalized communities. I believe that genius is equally distributed amongst the population on this entire earth.
Absolutely.
What's the difference? The difference is who has access to the training, the support, the leverage, who has access? That's the difference. And I think that we as leaders have the power to create access for all of our children.
And on that note, close the access gap. Dr. Monique Darisaw, I kill the proud superintendent of Uniondale Union Free District in Uniondale, New York. Dr. Akil, if my audience want to expand upon any of the strategies, any of the practices that you highlighted in this podcast, how would they be able to get in touch with you?
So you can, I'm on LinkedIn and I respond to my inboxes. So you can find me at Dr. Monique Darisaw Akil on LinkedIn. I'm also on X at M Darisaw Akil, and I'm also on Instagram. And I would love to be a part of a conversation with every one of your listeners. This has been really a very rich conversation.
Rich conversation indeed. And to my audience, please reach out to Dr. Darisaw Akil. Thank you so much for coming on BFE. I was excited. I saw Dr. Akil at the NYSA conference, or it was in New York. And I said, "You ready?" I was like, "You ready for BFE?" And she just gave me like, "Yeah, yeah." I'm like, "You don't even understand about the questions that you put." Then I got it today, like, for real, Mike, for real with them questions. But it's so good to have you on. I told you I spoil my viewers with the best, and they are going to get top notch. And Dr. Akil, you got a fan in Western New York up here with the work that you're doing. Thank you so much for everything you do for our families and kids. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.